The information presented in this podcast is not intended for the treatment or prevention of disease or any medical condition, nor is a substitute for medical advice. The information contained herein in this podcast reflects only the opinion of the author and presenter and is in no way considered required practice.
Welcome to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connects your brain to your brawn.
Hi, this is Eric Fiorello, and I want to welcome you to Motivation and Muscle. This is the podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. Today is October 28, 2014, and we are sponsored by Fiorello Barbell Company here in upstate New York, where we're not the biggest, but we're the best. And our motto is, we don't try, we succeed. And we want to tell you one thing. This show is going to be full of inspiration, and this could possibly lead into more than one show. Today's show is called From the Neck Down, and Roger LaPointe, obviously, if you've been listening on Tuesdays, is a regular guest and contributor to the show. We're going to get into the neck, the traps, the rhomboids, the shoulders, and we're probably going to keep going all the way down to the feet. This is going to be some very, very interesting subject matter. So I want to introduce the president of Atomic Athletic, Roger LaPointe. Roger, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Eric. Glad to be here.
I'm glad to have you here. You know, with all the mail we've been getting and all the people that we've been helping here, you can't help but be very inspired of what's going on with Motivation and Muscle. So let's kick right into From the Neck Down. And where do you want to start?
Well, you and I were talking about doing this yesterday, and it ties right in with what my Thursday Atomic Athletic Bombproof Bulletin was, which was neck work. And I had found this really fantastic York Barbell head harness illustration, actually two of them, from two separate ads in the this 1938 issue from, I think it's March 1938. Mm-hmm. The back cover, you know, you always hear guys saying, all right, well, I know with the head harness, you know, that's the little harness that you has the chain hanging down from it, and you have the weight hanging below your chin, and you do neck extensions, right? Well, I have guys all the time saying, oh, you know, you can only do one exercise with that.
Yep.
Well, right on the back cover, it shows a guy doing the flexion movement with the head harness. And it's fantastic because the guy's doing he's got the weight behind his head. Mm-hmm. And his back is arched with his legs slightly bent, and he's contracting his neck and going back really far. You can tell, you know, he's looking right at the ceiling and then bringing his chin down. If you've ever tried that movement,
good luck, huh?
I get guys all the time saying, well, you know, neck is isolation stuff.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Well, you know, I saw one of the best presentations on neck work ever by the former strength coach from the University of Michigan, Mike Gittleson. And we were both presenting at Ohio State University for their NSCA clinic. I think it was 2011. And Mike really got interested in neck work towards the end of his 30 years at the University of Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they went for in that 30-year period, they had 29 bowl games under their belt. So, you know, quite the powerhouse. They're not doing so good this season, but
right.
which – you know, I went to Michigan State. They got crushed by Michigan State last weekend, but that's totally beside the point. Mike really got interested in neck work because of the concussion issue.
Yep.
And one of his longtime friends, who had actually played for him, was apparently having real memory issues.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't an old guy. He was like the same age as you and I, Eric.
Right.
So we're talking early 40s for listeners who aren't familiar. And I don't think the guy had even played pro football. If he did, it wasn't for very long.
Right.
And he had been an assistant coach for Mike, I guess, at one point. What we're hearing about with these concussion issues is really tragic, and mm-hmm. it's a cumulative effect. Now, what Mike has been finding is, and he's been literally crisscrossing the country talking to football coaches and observing their training and all that kind of thing, seeing if they do things like neck work, because it's his
right.
theory that one of the best ways to avoid this type of head trauma is by having a well-developed neck.
Mm-hmm.
And they always did neck work at the University of Michigan. I sold them a bunch of equipment over the years. Mike is really one of the top guys ever
yeah.
in strength coaching. And he even allowed me to shadow him in the weight room, which,
yep.
you know, a lot of U of M fans would, you know, give their left arm to do that. He involved neck training on a daily basis with these guys. And it was everything from manual resistance to mm-hmm. their four-way neck machines.
Yep.
And, you know, I get people asking me all the time, oh, so Rod, do you advise using a four-way neck machine? You're not a big machine guy. Yeah. The neck machines are great. The one thing that I do recommend if you're a coach is mm-hmm. you're probably going to need more than one. Because unlike a lot of machines, let's compare it to a leg extension machine. The leg
yep.
extension machine, you do one exercise, leg extensions. The four-way neck machine, you do four directions.
Yep.
So that guy, to get all four directions, has to do, you know, let's say you're having them do, you know, three sets of 10. Just
yep.
as a basic idea. Well, three sets of 10 is 30 exercises times four.
Right.
So for a four-way neck machine to get as many guys going through it on a football team or, you know, a soccer team or it doesn't matter what, you've got to have four times as many machines. Otherwise,
right.
when they're going through those circuits, whether it's machines or free weight stations or whatever the circuit is, you're going to have a backup at the four-way neck machine
yep.
because it does four different exercises. So, you know, you've got to take that into account as a coach. Personally, I prefer to do free weight type exercises for the neck. But that's because I'm more of a free weight guy.
Yep.
But the neck machine is great because, like many machines, it's easier to teach to the athlete. You know,
mm-hmm.
and let's face it, if a guy's playing football, his main goal is not to be a weightlifter. It's to be a football player.
Well, you also got to remember, too, with four-way neck machines, they were taken out of just about every gym because of the litigation with them. You know, people were supposedly hurting their neck, and then they were all coming around saying they were breaking their necks. Now, as far as a four-way neck machine, I mean, anybody that listens to the show knows I do have some first-generation Nautilus here at my little complex. And I use the first generation Nautilus neck machine. That's not the only thing I use. I use Randy. I don't want to give him a plug, but I will. I use Randy's neck harness. I also
triangle on it, right?
That's correct. Yep. I also use resistance with a plate. I'll hang my head off a bench, and I'll put the center of a big fat deep dish, old school, played against the center of my forehead. And I don't use a towel, most people tell you too, because you can cut your head or make a big dent. I don't really give a damn. Hang the thing off, do my reps, you know, et cetera, using different size plates. And I do a thing that years ago I saw it, and I wish I could give credit to who it was. Obviously, I use towels if I want to do resistance. It's the same stuff. But what I do is I went out and got a little soccer ball, a kid's soccer ball, and I deflated it most of the way, not all the way. And what I do is I take it and put my head on it and go up and down the side of the cement wall on my garage. That works the living hell out of your neck. And not only that, it's easy on it where you're not going to damage it. So those are the things I like to do. But, you know, when we're talking neck, though, Raj, too, you know, we're talking the whole – to me, it's a whole big piece. You've got the shoulder girdle. You got the traps. You got the rhomboids. You know, obviously, keep going with what you're going with. But let's tie this whole thing in and talk about exercises we're going to do. Obviously, we want to get those traps as big and as thick as we can, et cetera, et cetera. So we'll keep going.
That leads right into the big point that Mike made about the exercises in his presentation. I believe, and I could be off by a couple muscles here, but I believe he said there are 54 muscles in the head and neck region that all relate to the neck and the spinal column that goes into the head. That's a lot of muscles, guys.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's virtually impossible to isolate those muscles, and in my opinion, you probably don't want to isolate them. You want to work them together, and I don't know how you would. It's a whole system. So my favorite neck exercise is actually the dead hang snatch.
Right.
Just it snatch from the hang. Do it for reps. You're not going to do as much weight as a full snatch, but you use a lot less in the way of hips and a lot more in the way of traps to do it. And my buddy Bill St. John, who was known as a bodybuilder, but he actually was the York demo poster boy, which is what I did in the 90s periodically, for strength coaches and shows and stuff like that. And Hoffman always had the guys do Olympic lifting. So Bill, who I think he said he never weighed over 225 at about 5'10", and he came in the top five in the Mr. America contest. I believe he was in it six times, placing second twice, I believe. In that run, he won. At that time, they had body part wins as well.
Yep.
And in that run, he won every body part. And at one point, he got special notice for his neck development. Now, he and Val Vasiliev, his training partner, and Val won the Mr. America contest in '64. Yep. They're both from New Jersey, and they spend a lot of time on the Jersey Shore, on the beach. They do a lot of hand balancing and that kind of thing. Well, one of their feats of strength was what Bill calls the plank, but it's not the plank that everybody thinks of today that is, you know, Pilates, yoga-ish move.
Right.
No, this is where the guy gets his body stiff and has his feet on one bench and his head on the other. He's looking at the ceiling and no support underneath. Now, if you've ever tried that, you'll see a lot of people do it with, like, with their shoulders supported. Now, Bill did it with just his occipital on the bench. That's the knob on the back of your head.
Yep.
And his feat of strength was not just doing that. It was doing that with Val doing a handstand on his chest.
It's pretty nasty stuff, man.
Yeah. And, you know, but he did all the sort of standard neck work that you're talking about, the manual resistance, the neck bridging. And one of the things that he used to do is forward neck bridging, which I'm assuming you do kind of with the soccer ball, right?
Well, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I bridge, too. I mean, you know, I get right down against the woodwork and bridge, too. So, yeah,
and,
I mean.
In bridging, guys will say, oh, that's really hard on the neck. Well, it, you know, there are a lot of things that are hard on your body when we do this kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
And the beauty of the bridging is, once like that dead hang snatch, it's actually tying in the whole body. So, especially all the spinal erectors.
Yep.
So, you've got that chain in there. And, you know, I get guys saying, hey, you know, I just want a big neck. Really what you want is big spinal erectors that go all the way up into your skull.
Yep.
That's what you want. And if you look at old pictures of Grimmick, you can't see his spine because there are just these two thick spinal erectors going along his spine and this crevice. I had one guy tell me, he says, oh, my God, it looks like he's got a butt crack all the way up to his head.
Absolutely. Because if you think about, I remember old issues of Iron Man. Probably in the late 60s, and obviously you being an Olympic lifter, think about, like, Riegert, man.
I have a picture of Riegert on my wall in the hallway going up the stairs to my office.
I mean, those are cobras running up the middle of his back. Think of Ahola, that one picture that was on Randy Strassen's Milo. I mean, you want to talk about a back, you could probably put two-thirds of your hand between his spinal erectors. You think of, there were big articles years ago. I remember reading Joe Doobie, who was quite an accomplished lifter. They were all trying to figure out.
Yeah, champion, I believe.
Awesome.
Yeah.
They're all trying to figure out why the Russians were winning everything. And he had gone over there, and he had watched them, because I have one here. They, and Alexia was one of them. And they wanted to know how these guys were getting these spinal erectors that were just off the charts, and they could lift anything they felt. Forget the drug abuse they're always going to say about it, because it's all bullshit, most of it anyways, and I don't really care about even exploring that. They go over there, and they're watching these guys, and they're on a pommel horse with their feet locked, like on those gymnastic. They look like they look like broomsticks going all the way up the wall.
Yeah.
Their length, all right? Mm-hmm. They lock in there, and they're getting enormous, you know, someone's putting an Olympic bar on the back of their neck. They're going down. You got to figure it's probably right at your navel where they're on the pommel horse. They're going down and exploding up, okay, keeping their legs stiff the whole time. What they found was What do we want to call the machine? Well, I have a Yesus machine, which is specifically for doing that and your abdominals, which it's phenomenal.
Well, you've got the glute ham unit.
Well, it's a glute ham. But what's the other thing? There's another machine.
Just the hyperextension.
They're doing it. So these guys come back and they're figuring, okay, we're going to try it, and they were just using stuff like that, makeshift. And guess what? They start blowing these erectors up like crazy. And what they said was, they didn't even have to train the deadlift or any of the Olympic lifts as hard as they had to, because this exercise alone would not only build the erectors and the transfer would be incredible over, and they wouldn't lose anything if they backed off on the standard exercises, but their explosion was better. And let's face it, anytime you got a set of strong erectors, the bottom line is, unless you screw up, you're going to be able to put it over your head.
Right.
So,
yeah.
You know, big erectors, obviously, but, you know, you look at these guys with the traps and the rhomboids and the deltoids. So, you know, let's keep rolling. I mean, go finish up with the erectors, Raj. But, I mean, there's so many pieces here that we can connect up.
I'm glad you bring up the pieces concept. I just found a pile of these, and, guys can call in about them. I'll put them on the site. The original York 3-wall chart set for powerlifting. They had exercises for the bench, the deadlift, and the squat. So one of the exercises that they had for the deadlift was the bent over row.
Yep.
Well, guys, if you've never seen the book Strength Training Anatomy by Frederick Delavier, it's a fantastic study. And you're getting into the kind of the real strength nerd aspect of this, because what you've got here is anatomy chart illustrations of the muscles that are actually being worked during certain exercises. So if you look at page 77, bent rows. Bent rows were one of the exercises in this chart for powerlifting. And you say, well, you know, are bent rows really that important? Yeah, because you're getting that whole upper back thickness. And the musculature that they have highlighted here starts right at the top going into the back of your skull. It's the entire trapezius, which is the trapezius are two fan-shaped muscles that start at the base of the occipital and actually extend to your shoulder blades and hook in with the spine. Then you've got your posterior deltoids, your infraspinatus, your teres minor, your rhomboid major, your teres major, your latissimus dorsi, also known as your lats.
Lats,
you know, it's the big fan-shaped muscles on your back underneath your armpits there.
I call them bat wings, man.
Exactly. And then in your arms, your brachialis, your biceps brachii, and your brachioradialis.
Mm-hmm.
So it's mostly upper back. Now, let me read to you from this where they talk about exactly what you're doing. This exercise contracts the latissimus dorsi, teres major, posterior deltoid, and the forearm flexors. So you're going to get forearms into it, grip guys.
Sure.
Biceps brachii, brachialis, brachioradialis. When the shoulder blades come together, the rhomboids and trapezius contract. Your rhomboids are hard to see. They're covered up by a lot of stuff back there, especially the lats and the trapezius. They are not as small a muscle as people think. They're in there sort of between the spine and the shoulder blades. What they're going to do is they're going to provide a lot of that clenching strength when you clench your shoulder blades together and rotate them. So think about how many movements in sport involve the rhomboids. Damn near everything.
And I know, and you probably know from experience, I know when I have, like, I've messed the rhomboid up. You know, I know I got to go and get it fixed up real quick, you know, because it really limits the use of your arms.
Right.
You know, if you're getting into doing any type of lifting, you know, it just doesn't feel right back there when you're doing stuff. And a lot of people screw the rhomboids up when they're putting weight up overhead. That's a big thing right there. Mm-hmm. But I just want to say something real quick in relation to the bent row. If you got a good glued ham machine and you really want to get something that's going to really build the living shit out of your rhomboid, it'll do the whole posterior chain, but you'll get those cobra look, even, you know, those spinal erectors, they'll get thicker and thicker. I do a close grip bent row, which is pretty hard because it's going to cut down your weight quite a bit. You're going to have to put that ego to the curb for a while, stick with it. And what I do is I go back and forth between that and the glued ham machine. You want to talk about getting a back pump? Now, it depends if you're going to use any weight with it, but obviously the glued ham is pretty concentrated on the back, so you're going to have to be very careful when you're doing this, because you can tire out pretty easy with it. But I'll tell you right now, I've gotten killer bang for the buck doing those two things, and it will increase the size of your back exponentially. So I just wanted to pass that on. I don't know if many people do that, but the close grip bent row is big time back.
Occasionally I've mentioned that to guys, and when they know what I'm talking about, I frequently hear, you know, that kind of hurts my wrists when I do that. And I say, that's where your oddball specialty bars come in. Like your, I know an easy curl bar is not that oddball, but an easy curl bar is the example that I always give, because it's got funny bends in it. And then you've got your super curl bar, which has even funnier bends in it. And everybody's anatomy is a little different. I try to point this out to Olympic lifters, because it's really common today, and there are some big name guys that push this on the internet. Your feet have to be exactly in this position when you're going to do your pull for your clean and your snatch.
Yep.
Well, let me tell you something. I'm 5'3". And I know that my feet are going to be in a different position than the 7-foot-tall professional wrestler that I used to train.
Yep.
We have very different anatomies, and the biomechanics are different.
Yep.
So, you know, to some extent, you know, you can get the rule books for Olympic lifting, and everybody's snatch has to fall within certain parameters.
Mm-hmm.
But those parameters do not extend to exactly the foot angle that you need and that kind of thing. So when I hear stuff like that, it makes me cringe. You know, I shut my eyes for a moment, I count to five, and then I move on, because I don't want to say, well, that guy's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Even though he is wrong, because you've got different anatomies, and not everybody's the same. And Smitty pointed out to me, and I know we're talking about feet right now, but when it comes to working the neck and doing something like, let's say, a snatch grip pull or a clean grip pull, which is just Those are some of the best neck exercises you can do. And this is true for trap bar pulls, too, and trap bar shrugs. I love trap bar shrugs. You can, because of the side position of your hands, which is a lot like doing dumbbells, because of the trap bar rigidness and the fact that your hands are then connected by this diamond shape or whatever. You know, sometimes people call it a shrug bar or a trap bar or whatever. They're variations, but basically you're standing inside a square of some sort or a diamond-shaped thing. With the trap bar, you can really add weight. And it is the upper back and the neck and the shrug movement, you can do a ton of weight.
Yep.
And don't shy away from doing a lot of weight, especially with that exercise. It's not a new concept. I actually highlighted this article, Do You Want Sloping Shoulders, from that 1938 Strength and Health.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, right on the first page of this article, there are many good dumbbell movements to develop the trapezius, but the best results will be had with the heavier barbell. Well, the trap bar and its different variations had not been invented at that point.
Right.
But we have them today. There's no reason why somebody shouldn't use that. Especially if maybe you do have some lower back issues, you get a more upright position than with a barbell where your hands are in front.
Plus, it takes the load off the biceps because you're supinated. So, you know, if anybody that's had injuries or things of that nature, that will help you out. And besides that, you can take a trap bar. It's a full body movement if you want. I mean, you got a deadlift slash squat there if you know how to do it correctly.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you something I've been doing. I told you this off air. I said this on one of the shows with Brooks. I've been doing this for 6 weeks. I've been doing high shrugs back and forth with the Nautilus four-way.
Hey, Eric,
combined with,
tell them exactly what a high shrug is, because
for anybody,
it's a strange movement to a lot of people, but it's so basic and you can do such heavy, heavy weight with it.
Absolutely. Number one, have a power rack. Number one, do not take any chances with squat stands. Not unless you know how to dump a bar behind you, because you could get in some serious trouble if you want, you know, get a little too eager with weight. But basically, this was off one of my heroes, J.C. Heiss. This guy, he was an incredible lifter, and he worked hard. He traveled the country. He wrote articles. You got to look him up. He was awesome. And he came up with – it was all basically based off a lot of Mark Barry back in the day. The 20 reps breathing squats, you know, and gallons of milk a day could put weight on a rake, as they say. Incredible what these guys are doing. Well, Heiss had done this. Heiss was a deadlifter, and I don't know if it was by accident or what ended up happening. J.C. Heiss ended up, well, picture yourself. You're standing upright. You're going to get under a bar like you would squat. So
for
he
back
puts
squat.
The, you know, back squat. So what he did basically is he ended up putting this bar on his back, on his traps, and he started breathing. It was like what they were doing with the breathing squat. They would squat, come up, maybe take 3 to 10 breaths, deep breaths, go back down because it enlarged the rib cage like crazy. Well, Heiss ends up doing this and starts seeing major gains in physical and structural and muscle like you wouldn't believe. And this is a guy that worked hard for a living. You know, we read about these guys. They're incredible. You know, they bust their ass all day, whether they're farmers or coal miners or whatever. And these guys are going. So before I even hit that, don't tell me you can't make any gains because you're working all day in a stinking cubicle. Who cares, man? So he's out doing this, right? And what he was doing, this is how I do it. Put it on. It's on your traps. You stand up with it. So basically, if you use this right, you can even make this like a full-blown partial squat, because the thing is you want support strength, and that's one of the things I liked about it. So learn the lift. I put it on. I do a couple big breaths as I was coming up with it, and then as you're descending, or whatever you want to say, as the bar is coming down slowly to back where it should be, you let out all your breath very slowly. I do that. Repeat. You know, you want to hold coming up to the top, blow out as you're coming at the bottom. Well, I started doing this again, but I've been mating it with my major moves because I wanted to see what I could do with it. And at first, it is going to tire your shoulder girdle out. So if you're doing any pulling, obviously squatting, you are doing neck work, which is pretty direct. So you're really kind of hitting everything very hard. But what I do is on the major lift, I stay with singles. So if I'm doing a hand thigh deadlift with my big 55-gallon drums, I'll do a single. I'll walk in, grab the bar. I could be doing anywhere from singles to four reps. I never go over fours or threes too much with it because it's so direct. Use a medium weight. I can for the day, I can either go up or stay where I am. From there, I go right over the Nautilus four-way neck machine. Once again, one to four reps all four ways. Get my drink, whatever I'm going to do. Start right back with the deadlift again. But I'm increasing weight every time in the deadlift, whether I'm increasing in the other two movements or not. In 6 weeks, I've put over an inch and a half on my traps.
That's
a viable gain. I saw a friend of mine on Saturday who said to me, I said, boy, my neck's a little sore today. He goes, I got to tell you, he goes, I've noticed the last few times I saw you, he goes, your neck and your traps, you look gigantic all through there again. I'm like, well, I'm experimenting with stuff, and it works. And I can tell you this, I'm not having any problems at all with it. My neck feels so friggin' strong. My upper back, see, one of the things I'm using this for, obviously, is to lift the stone. And I felt that the stronger I could get my upper back, because I think we don't think enough of the upper back, I felt that this was going to be the hinge pin that was going to get me to lift that 400-plus stone and anything else I want to tackle next year. So I would say give it a try. You don't need to have 55-gallon drums. You can deadlift. You can press. You can I did it the other night with a press. I went in the power rack, set it right at about the middle of my eyes, 4 inches up with the other set of rods. Didn't go over 200. I did 10 singles with it. 200 doesn't sound like much, but push it and hold it for 10, you know, 10 singles. And at the same time, I'm working the high shrug and the four-way neck with it. Give it a shot. See if you can move 200 after two singles. You'll find out. It'll humble you quick. And the idea here is not to hurt yourself, to get yourself broken in with this stuff. I don't care how long you've been lifting. If anybody thinks they're going to peel 400 off like that, they're full of shit.
One of the things that we try to focus on in this show is when we give numbers, we try to give real numbers, not inflated numbers with fake weights and things like that.
You mean people are using fake weights?
Yeah.
it's just like all these girls that supposedly look so hot and they're all airbrushed, you know?
Wait a minute. Those girls in Playboy?
No, not even that. Even all this fitness shit.
I know.
You know what I mean? It's like, and then you meet them and you're like, what the hell, man? I turn around and walk the other way, but whatever. No,
Eric, we should do a show just on the things that I've seen on the TV sets.
Sure. We could do it.
When I went to did the thing for Kiana's flex appeal for York. It was awesome, but it's a whole different issue. We could talk about bikinis all day and whatnot, but
yeah,
the
whatnot is right.
So, like when we were talking yesterday about this whole series that we're putting together here, on Sunday, I did use two different tools, technically three, I guess, if you count a pair of Indian clubs as two items.
Mm-hmm.
But my workout, it was a beautiful day here Sunday, And I got in a new antique millstone. You know, it's part of stock to sell, that kind of thing. But 3 3/4 inches thick, so I could grab it with my hands and didn't have to, you know, bear hug it.
Right.
It only weighs 104 pounds, and this one is 22.5 inches in diameter, which is a perfect size to grab. Mm-hmm. And what I one of the exercises I was doing was based on this article that I read. It just goes through all these different exercises for the upper back and the neck and the spinal erectors. So they talk about the shoulder shrug, and then they say another variation is to bend the body forward, not quite as far as in the rowing motion, but about halfway forward between right angles and erect. In this position, practice the shrugging movement.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I tried that using the this millstone.
Yep.
It was tremendous. It was really, really tremendous. And it really hit the upper spinal erectors where I'm pinching the shoulder blades together. And that angle, man, seriously, when I got home and the Indian clubs I was using, you know, this doesn't sound like much weight, but these were wooden Persian meals or 15 pounders. You know, they're, I think, 33 inches long. You know, it's a, and seven,
it's a long one.
Yeah, and seven inches in diameter. So, lots of leverage, all that kind of thing. So I'm doing all kinds of Indian club work with those and going back and forth with this millstone. And my mother-in-law was there, and she's like, Roger, have you been losing weight? I said, oh, my God, am I losing weight? And she says, well, your waist looks smaller or something. Maybe it's just your neck is bigger. And I'm like, ah, that's why. It's that optical illusion thing. Because on the scale, I'm not losing any weight. It's my upper back and neck were just, you know, that exploded. It's, you know, one of the things that you just said, Eric, is you're talking about pressing for neck work.
Right.
And a lot of things that Olympic lifters or would-be Olympic lifters get wrong is they think that they're just going to press a barbell up when they're jerking it, or they throw it up there and then just lock it out with the elbows. Well, you don't actually just lock it out with the elbows. You lock it out with the neck and the upper back.
Absolutely.
So as you get that slight rotation in there and you've got that, I call it stretching the Olympic bar, so you're actually pulling out and you involve the lats with it, with that lockout, you do a shrug movement like that Heist shrug to lock in the neck and the shoulders, and that's all the traps. So whether it, when I'm talking about that dead hang snatch, it's not just the shrugging movement of the dead hang snatch. It's the lockout at the top, too. So you've got both aspects of this. So when Eric's talking about pressing, he's actually using his trapezius, too. It's not just the front delts, like a lot of people tend to think, oh, you know, standing presses are a front delt movement and some triceps or biceps brachialis. No. There's a lot of neck involved. And they mention that too in this article. And you really want to tie all these things in together. And you'll find that with a single lift, you can be busting out sweat. And you should feel that through your whole body. Smitty would say, he's vibrating with energy.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Smitty would get so excited. Look at that lifter. He's vibrating with energy. He's going to go out and he's going to bust it loose.
Yeah, but you know, that's the thing, Raj. We've always pointed out on this show, in any show I try to do, that the body's a unit. We're not going to take and do one. Bodybuilders like to do one body part. I don't. All right? Maybe I'd go out one day for the hell of it because I haven't done it in a while and go out and do some real thick bar curls and stuff like that. That, to me, I use as a full body too. Mm-hmm. But the point, I'm sure the point we're trying to get at is this. Use every muscle you can involve in every lift you do, because if you train like that, it's got the trickle-down effect where – You know what I respect about lifters more than anything that are really truly lifters, and this will tie right into this. I like looking at a lifter and say, all right, well, you know, maybe their delts look real good, but the thing is they don't dominate anywhere because everything around them has been trained so heavy and so hard and they're so muscular. They have a shape that, you know, it's not – you see some people, shoulders, birdcage chest, all right? Maybe they got bigger calves than their friggin' thighs. The point of the matter is you build the body as a unit, so when someone looks at you, not only are you going to only have the look of strength and power, but you're going to be a complete athlete. And the things that have to be caught up will catch up when you are training in this fashion.
One of the guys that has performed at a number of my events, and yep. I've mentioned him not just for his barbell and kettlebell juggling routine. And when I say barbell, I mean he actually juggles barbells like Sig Klein. I worked with him on this with the old Sig Klein routine. But he also broke the one-hand barbell deadlift world record. It's Andrew Derniot. Yep. And you get a lot of guys who will see him competing like at the Arnold, where he's come in second, I think, three times in the grip gauntlet, and easily the lightest weight guy on the stage. I think he might be up to, like, 240 now. And
which isn't light, by the way.
Well, when you're comparing...
Well, with a 330, or yeah, I know, I understand it.
But he's, like, 6'3 and a half. Yeah. And he's one of these guys that's long-limbed. I believe he was a collegiate lacrosse player. So you get a lot of people saying, oh, who's that tall, skinny guy? And then you get next to him and you realize that his bone structure is long, but his musculature and tendons and everything are super thick. Mm-hmm. So they're not pumped up. They're like thick cords. And that's the difference between the guys that are really training for strength versus training for bodybuilding. And you can see this on the bodybuilding stage when there's a former Olympic lifter or power lifter or strongman guy that for whatever reason – decides to enter a bodybuilding contest, the muscles themselves have a different density and blockiness that the bodybuilders don't have. The bodybuilders end up looking puffed up and rounded. And, you know, I guess if that's what the judges are looking for, then that's a good thing. But, you know, it's a visual thing that you can see that the strength guys, the guys who have trained for strength, where the look that they've got is just a happy byproduct.
And when they do decide to trim down, if they do, they're going to always look like they've lifted weights, where a lot of people do that. They look like they never touched anything.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, we are getting close to the end. What I want to do is, I mean, we're going to do this series for sure because this is just too damn interesting. Why don't we tell everybody if they're let's put a short routine of, well, maybe the best bang for the buck. I just want to say one thing before we go into that, too. My feeling is if you know how to do a dip correctly, you can probably take care of most of your upper body.
Mm-hmm.
I love doing dips, weighted or body weight. You know, think about some of the people that were great dippers. You look at their physique. You know, that kind of speaks for itself. But let's get into it. You know, we were talking about, you know, the Olympic lifts, the bent rows, you know, the trap rhomboid. Let's give a handful of
I'll give you
workouts.
Just say a quick workout
that I
would do that would be a standard thing. Let's say,
yep.
And I'll probably be doing a variation on this tonight. I'm going down to a customer's place down in Findlay, which is it's half-hour drive from here. He's buying some Indian clubs, and I'm checking out his gym, and he's got a little – key club type gym that he's put together in a barn behind his house.
Nice.
And I can't wait to see it because he's also sort of a picker, you know, like you see on that show, American Pickers.
Yeah, show. Yep.
Yeah. I've trained him and he actually, this will be a different episode, but he gave me an antique axe.
Nice.
Just as a gift for working with him. it's so cool. But so I'm going down there tonight, and this will be my basic routine. I do variations on this routine 3 out of 4 workouts. I start off with a press power jerk combination as warm up. So and I get pretty heavy with it, and I just keep going heavier and heavier till, you know, I start off pressing it, then it's got to be a power jerk because I can't press it anymore, and then I jerk it because I can't go any more than that. You know, Shemansky was once asked, do you do isometrics? And he says, yeah, every time I train. Oh, my God, you do isometrics every time you train? He says, yeah, I try to bust through my sticking point every time I lift.
Yep.
That's his isometric.
Well, an isometric is every time you miss, you know what I mean? You're trying. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So then, and I think tonight I'm going to be doing snatches, which will be my main thing. So then I'll do full snatches, but I always warm up with some snatches from the hang and overhead squats.
Yep.
Then I'll do front squats. And when I'm done with the front squats, then I'm going to do heavy pulls. And I'll do heavy snatch grip pulls.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to work into those from a halting snatch grip pull.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's not much weight, but I'm working all those different positions along the range of motion.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I don't know if Bill has iron boots there or not, but I'll either do some iron boot work or a couple sets of curls. And then I always hang from the, from a chin-up bar and do some, hanging frog kicks and abdominal work and that kind of thing. And that's my standard routine, and I'll do variations on that. Instead of doing the snatch, I'll do the clean. And instead of doing, depending on what I'm focusing on, instead of using the barbell for the presses, maybe I use dumbbells, or maybe I do the one-hand dumbbell swing, but I make sure to do the right arm and then the left arm, that kind of deal. But that's my basic routine that I've done for about 20 years.
Right. Now, for the people, though, that aren't Olympic lifters, all right, we'll go into a few things. We will just go over everything spot. Number one, you want to hit the whole girdle, everything, the upper back. Try dips if you haven't done them. That, but obviously use caution. We talked that we got into the bent row. We got into two different variations. You know, the regular row, and obviously I talked about the close grip. Roger talked about the trap bar. Obviously, you can work your traps. You're in a supinated position. You know, stand in the middle of that big diamond. You know, lock yourself in. You know, bring that bar up and shrug it. Down it goes.
Let's say I'm doing that workout that I gave, but I'm doing clean type stuff, meaning I'm doing a lot heavier weight than with snatches, typically 20 to 25% heavier. Mm-hmm. Let's say I had to unload a bunch of weights. I had a big shipment come in. And, it, you know, I'm day-to-day here. This is what I do at Atomic Athletic. Well, my lower back might be torched by the time I get to pulls. So instead of pulls, which is going to be hard on the low back, my low back is already done, I'll use a trap bar instead.
Right.
And do those trap bar shrugs at the end of every movement because it's already up there. Why not add that in?
No, it's fine. And exercise we didn't even go over, which really hits the posterior, is the Romanian deadlift.
Yeah.
I mean, that's big time. The way, I mean, I set it up a little bit different because I start it right at about mid-shin in the power rack when I do them. But the movements we talked about today and gone over, I mean, once again, we are talking about, you know, shoulders, rhomboids, traps. I mean, look it. You can do the shoulder stuff I do in the rack. You can do whatever Roger wants to put over his head, snatches, clean and press. I mean, that's something that you don't even hear about anymore. There's a number of things to do, and I mean, routine-wise, I mean, rep-wise, you can go anywhere from five sets of five to five singles to 5-4-3-2-1, whatever gets your fancy pretty much because – you know, we can tell you exact ways to do stuff, but you, like Roger said before, a 7-foot guy and a guy that's 5 foot, 5'6", leverages are going to be different, stances are going to be different. So we love giving you all this stuff, but the bottom line is you're going to have to go in and figure out what works best for you. But there isn't one exercise there that won't put weight on a rake. And if you want to become very muscular, strong, like Roger was talking, you want a lot of density. You want to have cable muscle, big, thick tissue, and maybe a little bad attitude with it too. That helps out when you want to be real aggressive and train. So there's not much you can't get from something like this. You there?
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, I'm just listening to you.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Yeah, you're summing it up. I know he's a bodybuilder, and that's what he's thought of, and a movie actor, but the first book that I bought in weightlifting was Arnold's Encyclopedia of Bodybuilding, right?
Yep.
You know, big compendium of exercises. And I still have my original copy, and there's – a section in that book where he talks about gloves and do you want to use gloves in lifting? And he says, no, don't use gloves. When you're lifting, if a buddy asks you to help him move from his apartment, you don't want to have to stop and say, oh, let me get my lifting gloves so that I can do this. You want to – you've built this muscle and tendon and ligament strength and all that kind of thing. It should be useful. It's not just for looks.
Yep.
And I don't know how much that's true with the bodybuilding world today. Obviously, they're in better shape than the average guy. But certainly what Eric and I are talking about here is useful muscle, where it, you know, you got to carry it. You know, the other day when I got a load of stone in, I had to unload and inventory the stone.
Right.
My routine that evening was a little screwed up and unusual. I had to modify it. Why? Because I had just gotten in a whole bunch of oddball stones. I even got in these Japanese stone lanterns that I sell for, you know, occasionally I'll get a landscape guy buy one. But basically, you put a candle in it, and I get these martial arts guys getting them. They serve a double purpose. The top, which is sort of like a little pagoda, it looks like, they're all made out of granite. They use them for the Hojo Undo jar-type tiger claw gripping work. And as I'm unloading all this stone, I'm like, oh, yeah, these finally came in. My stone cutter's done with these. So I'm carrying a pair of these in with my fingertips. And my forearms are just aching, but so is my neck because I'm doing shrugs with it and moving them around. And, you know, I watch these videos. That's fun for me. But I'm actually able to unload this stuff myself. Mm-hmm. And that is the beauty of doing this kind of thing. You're functional.
Preparation. You're always prepared for whatever's coming. That's what it's all about.
Exactly.
That's it. We're going to pick up we're probably going to get into the limbs. So we'll start with the arms, bicep, forearm, wrist, fingers, hands. We've done some of that, but we're going to get into it real, real deep. So that'll be part two of From the Neck Down. We're going to do this series. We're going to follow right down, like I said, to your toes. Raj, why don't you give all your information, and then I'll give mine. And I got to, before we go on, I'm not going to give his last name. I just got a text from a friend of ours named Frank. Frank is going to be doing a show with me very soon. He's a fireman in Boston. And he's involved with MDA, which is really the whole reason why we're here. But Frank just sent me a text, and he said he had left a message, but he said he was just calling to say to me that the last few podcasts have been awesome. That's his exact words. So, Frank, you know who you are. So, we thank you for being part of the show, and always appreciate a compliment.
That's great.
So, Raj, once again, we're getting great feedback. You know, they're even calling people out now on the show. So let's get everybody your information. We'll give you mine, and we'll get ready for next week.
Cool. My name is Roger LaPointe, and the company is Atomic Athletic. That's AtomicAthletic. And the site is AtomicAthletic.com. You can sign up for my email newsletter, which is free, and I do not sell those addresses. I get people asking that all the time. Been doing it for 15 years. A lot of the back ones are available once you sign up online, and that's called the Atomic Athletic Bombproof Bulletin. You can sign up on the lower left of the front page there. And then I've also got the blog on the upper right, and it's just very simple. You see BLOG on that front page, and you can go in there and get a ton more information for free.
Yep. And you know, Raj has got plenty of equipment, so, stuff we're talking about, if you're interested, you know, contact him. He'll definitely give you the time, and you can make a decision on what you want to do. You set, Raj?
Yep. That sounds good.
Okay, this is Motivation and Muscle. This is the podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. Sponsored by Fiorello Barbell Company here in upstate New York, www.fiorellobarbellco.com. We're on iTunes and Stitcher. So, you know, if you go out to iTunes, sign up. We're going to have a banner on the Motivation and Muscle Show website shortly. Facebook, Fiorello Barbell. Twitter, Fiorello Eric. Motivation Muscle is www.motivationandasinandmuscle.com. You get a hold of me at FiorelloBarbell@NICAP.RR.com. If you call me, you will get a call back, so don't be shy. Obviously, you know how to get a hold of Roger. If you got any questions about this show, both of us will be more than happy to help you out. You got some great information here today. You know, put the rubber to the road and just be inspired. Inspire yourself to go out and do great things. This show is only going to get bigger and better, I promise you that, and we're going to get even more aggressive with it. So, Raj, thanks for being on today's show, brother.
Thanks, Eric. Lots of fun.
You're welcome. I love doing them. They're the best. We're very lucky we get to do this stuff.
Yeah.
That's all I can say.
Yep.
So for Roger LaPointe, this is Eric Fiorello. Thanks for listening in. We will see you next week, and we're going to have part two of From the Neck Down.
Thanks so much for listening to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connected your brain to your brawn. We'll see you next time.